Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, jawi viva kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where the program is archived, and we are syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, which was happy to welcome us sometime back as its first food program, informing me for the first time that this is a food program. I need to make note of that. I wasn't sure. It could have been, I don't know, a show about animals, animal liberation, or health and the environment. I don't know, anything. Social justice. But I guess we are a food program. But I always like to think of it as a little more. I like to think of it as the radio program whose mission it is to save the world. Because then maybe we would get more donations if a program were actually that important. I mean, look at the big donations that NPR gets, for example, huh? NPR, whose mission seems to be to, I don't know, teach people how to make teacups out of old toilet paper rolls. I don't know. And then even Pacifica gets a lot of money. Fancy set there. Fancy set for Democracy Now. But, I don't know, neither of those claims to be on a mission to save the world. We are on that mission, and there is a donate button at goveganradio.com, 501c3, believe it or not. You look at Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report? Huh? Well, without the information to achieve peace, what kind of report is it? Huh? The War and Peace Report? Does Democracy Now! Not know that Tolstoy said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields? And I say, as long as there is climate change, there will be battlefields. And Democracy Now! Really, in its, it's really quite irresponsible in its reporting on climate change, I must say. Hardly a day goes by where there is not an example of that. Kind of makes Democracy Now! A climate denier in some ways. In some ways worse than the corporate tools in con Greece. Democracy Now! Has a responsibility to pursue truth, we thought, no matter how inconvenient that truth may be. I mean, if Democracy Now! Were truly in pursuit of climate truth, well, I know, how would it be able to fill all that airtime then? What would it say? What, I mean, if it couldn't give us all that hot air from the likes of flesh eater Fibbin Bill McKibben, or this past week when it featured Oxfam with a report that coal is the number one driver of climate change. more hot air to distract from real solutions. Actually, the only real practical solution to climate change, the only real solution that can happen in time to save us, is to go vegan. We need a major global population shift from 50 to 85% of people who consume so-called livestock products to go vegan. Now, of course, you'd think I would say that because I'm a vegan talk show host. I've been vegan for 31 years. I would really like the animals to benefit from people not eating or using them at all. However, the only practical solution that I mention is actually presented by climate change specialists as being the only practical solution. And these are the climate change specialists, the climate experts who are at the World Bank. But they're not at some animal rights group, whatever that might be in this day and age, but I'm talking about Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang, who have stated that the only practical solution for climate change is a worldwide shift. 50 to 85% of people who eat so-called livestock products must go vegan by 2020, or it'll be too late. Too late. We talked about 1,700 U.S. cities facing submersion in the not-too-distant future. If we don't do something before it's too late, the only thing we can do before it's too late is for all of us to go vegan. And again, it's the climate specialists who are presenting that as the only practical solution. Now, why is democracy now ignorant of this? How is it that I can learn about it? You know, I'm just a normal guy from the Bronx, you know, graduate of Stuyvesant High School, Queens College, City University of New York, you know, some disc jockey from the Bronx. And Democracy Now, with its fancy New York City studios and a fortune in funding, it seems, at this point, it can't seem to seek out the facts, to seek out the only solution to the key to our survival. Oh, did I mention that this radio program is, our mission is to save the world? And who else is doing it? Huh? But you can't hear about this anywhere, right? You can't hear about it in the media. Yeah? Not from Pacifica and Democracy Now, nor the ABC, NNBC, BS, PBS, Fox censorship, Clear Channel censorship channel. Clear censorship channel. You have to come to this rinky-dink radio show, you know, that I do out of my room in the East Bay here, Northern California, to learn how to save the world. Yes, you don't hear it from the media. You don't hear it from environmental groups or any of the groups who comprise today's, well, what can we call it but fake animal rights movement? A fake animal rights movement, or FARM, you know, along with all of the organizations who are partners in this fake animal rights movement, which I guess would include the Humane Society of the United States, Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary Farm, Compassion Over Killing, Direct Action Everywhere. You know, what a service they could provide to animals, human or not, to the environment. You know, I mean, they have all the ammunition they need, and they just won't use it. These are the groups who are supposed to protect animals. And when the solution is we go vegan to save the world from climate change, that would protect animals. Not a peep. Not a peep. Yeah, the world's leading climate specialists tell us what the only solution is. It's veganism. And what do all of these fake animal rights movement groups tell us? Eat cage-free eggs. Buy crate-free bacon. Purchase grass-fed beef. Whew. It's hard to say who is more irresponsible, huh? You know, the these partner groups comprising the fake animal rights movement, or FARM, or Democracy Now!, which just this past week, as I mentioned, interviewed a representative from Oxfam telling us that coal is the number one driver of climate change. Ah, well, that's a new one. I hadn't heard that. But did anybody there, did any climate specialists anywhere say that if we just stopped using coal right now, that our climate change problems would be over? Has that been suggested as the only practical solution that we can do in time to save the world, to save our children, to save the planet? Haven't heard a peep. There are no climate experts saying that. Climate experts tell us that the only practical solution is to go vegan. Maybe I should repeat it. Well, I have already a few times, but you're not going to hear it anywhere else. And I'm told that you have to hear something repeatedly before it sinks in, you know what I mean? And anybody interested in saving the world? Okay, I know. It's more fun to take aim at, you know, factors or things that are outside of ourselves rather than take responsibility ourselves and actually go vegan. What? And give up cheese? Are you kidding? What? Give up bacon? I'd rather blame a coal plant than, you know, in the Balkans or something. It's easier to campaign against coal, right? And hug and kiss and celebrate and pop champagne bottles when we prevent a new coal plant from being built somewhere in the world. But that's not the solution, the only practical solution to climate change in time. What is? You heard me say it. Would ending coal actually stop climate change? Huh? We end coal today. Is climate change over? And again, no climate specialist suggests that. All the people who are opposed to the oil companies, you know, what's the suggestion? We'll end the use of oil tomorrow? And then how are you going to get to your protest? Anyway, I hate to tell you this, I hate to tell you this so much, I'm not going to tell you it because we have a break coming up now. I'm not going to tell you that coal actually, the use of coal may actually be helping to save us from climate change. I hate to tell you that, but I will tell you that coming up after the break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can donate to support this program. Click donate at goveganradio.com. On a Sunday afternoon. We get started 5 p.m. every Sunday. We're live. You can hear us by clicking Listen Live at goveganradio.com, where the program is archived. We're also on Stitcher Radio and iTunes. You can listen on your telephone at 605-562-7771. That's the listen line, 605-562-7771, or 605. And there is a call-in number. You're welcome to call in, interrupt anytime. The number is 855-660-4261, 855-660-4261. I did want to talk about coal. And why maybe we shouldn't be opposing coal if we're opposing climate change. That may take a few minutes. So let me put that off for a few minutes until after the next break. You know, every time I do put out on Twitter or Facebook that going vegan is the only practical solution to climate change that can be done in time, people always want to argue about that. If you want to argue about it, you can call 855-660-4261. But you may be calling to say, no, we need an alternative energy infrastructure. That would be the solution. However, that would take about 20 years, time we don't have. We have to get this done in time. We got to do this by 2020. So we don't have the 20 years for the alternative energy infrastructure, and it would cost, now estimated to cost $35 trillion. So we don't have the time or the money. It's not practical. Okay? So, you know, divestiture is you know, it's just symbolic nonsense. So, anyway, I want to get into that that aspect related to coal, you know, because last week Democracy Now! Had a guest on who said that coal is the number one driver of climate change. Well, you know, it really doesn't even matter right now what the number one driver of climate change is if there is only one practical solution, which is to go vegan. And we need 50 to 85% of the world that is currently consuming so-called livestock products to do it by 2020. It's the only practical solution. And it's when you see environmental groups and Bill McKibben and Democracy Now! Being so misleading, when you see so-called animal advocacy organizations telling us that any so-called animal products are sustainable, you know, it's what's going on here? You know, it's very motivating to make me want to organize a second World Vegan Summit and Expo, just so that, you know, there can be a gathering where we exchange the truth and look at reality a little bit. You know, I mean, this is, it's a bit much. I thought all my energy went into the first one in March, you know, a few months ago. We had a great turnout, wonderful people at the World Vegan Summit and Expo in Los Angeles. But now I think what we're working on doing, and we're working on this pretty quickly, it looks like it'll be July 29th, 30th, and 31st of 2016. So a year from July, we will take over the campus of the University of California at Berkeley and do the World Vegan Summit and Expo 2016. We especially want to encourage college students to attend, those on the verge of activism. Let's talk about reality. I think we may even put tickets on sale sometime this week. We're going to have an early bird ticket special, 3-day registration. Adults will be $77. College students will be $67. That will not include meals. We will then offer a meals-inclusive option afterward, which, again, it'll just be an option. You won't be forced. And at this event, I will be able to have food vendors who can sell food. You'll be able to get food nearby in Berkeley at restaurants and markets, and or you'll be able to take advantage of that option. But more about this coming on my Facebook page, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. But yeah, we need to do the World Vegan Summit and Expo 2016. And we'll talk about coal. We'll talk about the environment coming up. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and there are two extraneous, who knows why they're there, Bob Linden pages on Facebook. Each one maxed out to about 5,000, right? That's when we got started on Facebook. We didn't know we were supposed to have a fan page. Plus, who has the ego to want to have a fan page? I just had a regular old page, and it got maxed out. And then the second one got maxed out, and somebody said, no, you need a Go Vegan Radio page. So we didn't pay as much attention to that as we did to the other pages in the beginning. So you have those two other pages. They're maxed out usually, but then I say something about HSUS and somebody gets upset and defriends me and makes room perhaps for you. Please be my friend. The fake animal rights movement is not. There's a call-in number for this radio program, which is 855-660-4261. And you can listen at 605-562-7771. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com or wait for the archive to magically appear there. And we've been broadcasting now for 14 years. You can make a tax-deductible donation to support this radio program. Click Donate at GoVeganRadio.com and support the only medium that we're on for 14 years now. We talk about how the only solution for climate change is what? Well, it's a vegan radio show. What am I going to say? Yes, we have to go vegan. Actually, 50 to 85% of the population currently consuming livestock, so-called livestock products, must go vegan by 2020. You're not hearing it from me just because I'm a tree-hugging cow kisser. You're hearing that from the world's leading climate specialists. Yet everybody protests coal we're against coal. We eat meat and we're against coal, right? Or we're on Democracy Now. We drink cow's milk, but we're against coal. We call coal the number one driver of climate change. And just this past week, there was somebody from Oxfam on Democracy Now saying just that. And so here I am. What do I know, right? I'm saying the only solution to climate change is going vegan. They're saying the number one driver of climate change is coal. So what would happen if we ended coal immediately? I mean, we don't have any climate specialists saying, coal has to end now, nor would it be possible in the economic, business, corporate environment, government environment that we have. So I hate to tell you, but you're going to start accusing me of being pro-coal, but ending coal might actually be worse for climate change. Coal may actually be fighting climate change on our behalf. What a conundrum, huh? But soot seems to be more of an environmentalist than Fib and Bill McKibben and 350.org and Greenpeace and the Sierra Club and HSUS and all of them. So this is news from MIT under the headline, Global Warming Conundrum, Greenhouse Gases versus Aerosols. And Genevieve Wanucha writes that there's a tricky chemical trade-off at work in our skies as greenhouse gases provide their famous warming effect, a warming effect to Earth's surface. Aerosol pollution in the atmosphere actually partially counteracts it. Aerosols are tiny particles suspended in the air, both natural and industrial, including sea salt, mineral dust, ash, soot, sulfates, nitrates, and black carbon. Who would have thought, huh? They hang around, continuing here, they hang around in the air for around 10 days, scattering and absorbing radiation from the sun. Aerosols also provide nuclei for water droplets, boosting cloud formation, thus decreasing the amount of energy reaching the ground and providing a net cooling force. In short, greenhouse gases warm the surface, aerosols cool the surface. The trade-off applies to the real world, considering that China and India's coal burning creates an aerosol problem far worse than the U.S. or Europe ever had before the Clean Air Act in 1970. And the collapse of the Eastern Bloc's dirty economy reduced aerosol emissions dramatically. In principle, if China and India were to begin fixing their aerosol problem, which kills hundreds of thousands every year, they might actually contribute to global warming if they don't also cut greenhouse gas emissions. The cooling effect of aerosols would be removed, leaving greenhouse gases to warm the globe unimpeded. Now, again, a reminder from those same climate specialists, not the agriculture industry talking, but climate specialists from the World Bank, who tell us that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So, if China and India, I'm talking now, by the way, not MIT. If China and India were to fix their coal problem, they would have to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, which means they have to be participants in this worldwide global shift from consuming so-called livestock products. And yes, that includes dairy in India. They would have to shift to going vegan, like we all have to do around the globe. You know, the thing is, you're not sacrificing anybody or anything to go vegan. It's so delicious. Even Beyonce says how delicious it is, right? Seriously, I mean, it's the best thing you can do for health and, well, right now, it's the only thing you can do to save the world from climate change. Now, for example, I would suggest, go look at the menu. Look at the menu at Vegetarian House, which in San Jose, which is a 100% vegan restaurant. Vegetarian at one time could have meant vegan, although these days, you know, for a while, people said lacto-vegetarian, ovo-vegetarian. So, you know, there was a compromise. Now, they dropped the lacto, they dropped the ovo. People think they're vegetarians now if they have a cheese omelet and a glass of milk, you know, doing nothing for the environment, animals, or their health. But, okay. Vegetarian should mean vegan. Anyway, it means vegan at Vegetarian House in San Jose, which is 520 East Santa Clara Street. Go to vegetarianhouse.us. And, you know, you don't sacrifice anything. The food is so much better. Vegans are foodies. Come on, we love food. And we want to welcome you into this earth-saving lifestyle, okay, where we stop eating all animal products, we stop wearing animals, we stop using animals for all purposes, really. We need to do that. There's no sustainable animal product. There's no sustainable meat, dairy, fish, eggs. Where was I? I was at MIT. Okay, so in this report that tells us we better be careful for what you wish, you know, like, oh, we want to end coal right now, really? Okay, then climate change goes, you know, out of whack. So it says, indeed, aerosols via clouds reduce energy reaching the ocean, contributing a net cooling effect to both the surface and subsurface ocean temperature. So in the model they used, in their model, the aerosol's cooling effect is so strong, it even cancels out any greenhouse gas-induced warming. So this was from MIT, which is concerned about coal. Concerned about, you know, like diminishing the use of coal related to climate change. Can you believe that? But that's the way it is. You know, you have people out there who are telling us, you have to switch to grass-fed. Grass-fed, that's a climate solution right there, because, oh, factory farms are so awful. They're concentrated, right? So it turns out that the animals who are grass-fed compared to their harshly confined relatives produce up to 400% the methane. 400% the methane of those on the so-called factory farms. And I don't even know really what a factory farm is. I know that's the campaign by the fake animal rights movement to not eat animal products from factory farms, but instead eat animal products from not factory farms. One has to question, really, what is a factory farm? I mean, the vice president of the Humane Society of the United States, the pig killer, no, not Paul Shapiro, Joe Maxwell. His farm, his family, kills 50,000 pigs every year. He says he gets $30 more per pig as a premium because he can sell their flesh as humane. So 50,000 pigs, would that constitute a factory farm, a family farm? If you line them up, they'd be a line, you know, almost single file, almost 30 miles long. So, I don't know. Anyway, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And I did mention earlier that we are feverishly working on organizing a second World Vegan Summit and Expo. So we're working on the new improved model for 2016. And we may even have tickets on sale as early as this week. $77 early bird registration for 3 days. $67 for college students. We'll have more information on the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page. I'll send stuff out on Twitter. And also goveganradio.com. So we will continue. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Bob Linden pages on Facebook, and there's the worldvegansummit.com website, which I guess Ben Brayman to the rescue. If we are going to get to work on the World Vegan Summit and Expo 2016 2.0, new and improved, rebooted. I guess Ben, who helps us so much, will have to be working extra hard right now on the websites, the Facebook pages, because we want to get early bird tickets out there within, you know, just days. You know, so. Which again would run $77 for adults for a 3-day registration, $67 for college students. Not to say that college students aren't adults, but you don't have to take the discount if you don't want. And so we'll put those early bird tickets on sale very soon. So I guess Ben will be working on that and updating worldvegansummit.com and the Facebook page and the ability to sell those tickets and get the information there. And I'd like to thank Nature's Flavors for its support of this program and the first World Vegan Summit and Expo, which was a huge success in Los Angeles this past March. Just an awesome event, a wonderful gathering that seems to have demanded that there be a sequel. So we're working on that. And I suggest you check out the website of Nature's Flavors. Here's a company. All products are vegan. Thousands of products. So you can explore. The phone number for Nature's Flavors is 714-744-3700. And you can also you can order online, delivery 3 to 5 business days. And you might find something there for Dad for Father's Day. Sure you can if you look. And yeah, so I mean, just so many products there right now featuring organic amaretto flavor extract without diacetyl, organic raspberry syrup, vegan, kosher, organic French vanilla flavored coffee, shade grown, micro roasted, organic. Check out thousands of products at naturesflavors.com, and they are all vegan. naturesflavors.com. And let's see, so what do we where's that it's so hard to navigate. I have so many pages open on the screen here. What am I So I ruined it for coal for you this past hour, right? There you are. You like to protest against coal. You think it's a victory if we prevent some coal plant from opening up, when in actuality, it seems like we need coal being used in order to combat climate change. I know it sounds strange. If you're just tuning in, archives of this program are at goveganradio.com. So that's what the story, and I think next hour, let's see, can I ruin chocolate for you? No, I don't want to ruin chocolate. Please don't make me do this. Chocolate rules my life. Every cell in my body, every atom, every electron that goes back to the big blast, you know, that first whatever. my electrons were seeking out chocolate. I'm gonna have tell you something about chocolate you're not going to want to hear. I didn't want to hear about it, but misery loves company. Did you notice the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee report from the USDA? There was a bit of a critique of it by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, who point out some good, some bad, but, you know, a government agency connected to corporations and industry. What do you expect? We'll go into that a little bit after the break, and then chocolate. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Gary Francione is in the air, actually on an airplane. I hope it lands within a half hour so he can be on the program. Once again, welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. We're live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. You can listen by phone at 605-562-7771. We're also available via iTunes and Stitcher. Archives at GoVeganRadio.com. And, Daisy, want to say hello? Okay, come on my lap, baby. So, yes, I love you very much. Are you looking forward to a second World Vegan Summit and Expo? She was such a star at the first one, my sweetheart. And by the way, yeah, we're talking about doing this in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. July 29th, 30th, and 31st of 2016 on the campus of the University of California at Berkeley. So Cal Goes Vegan will be in one of America's most progressive communities, and it's about time we get things ignited toward going vegan, leading the way. And we invite college students to make it their summer break destination next year. We're putting tickets on sale probably within a day or two or three, and they will be merely $77 for adults, $67 for college students as an early bird special until August 1st, and then we'll hype the prices then. But so we're looking at doing this and having a great gathering where we will all come together and figure out how to help everybody go vegan and save the world and the animals and ourselves. And you know, because you don't get much reality from the corporations now, who are the environmental organizations, those who are in the fake animal rights movement. I mean, really, if just look at the best we can get from government and the Dietary Guidelines Advisory. And you know, we do have low expectations, don't we, of governmentment and, you know, political leaders and corporations and the health establishment. So, I mean, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine sees progress. I have problems with what I see listed here. So, I mean, PCRM says the good part is that in the guidelines single out the health value of vegetarian diets. I don't see the word vegan, and I hope people don't look at vegetarian and think, oh, I'll have dairy and eggs or fish and chicken. I don't know. Sometimes people consider themselves vegetarian and, you know, in those regards. So, okay, that was singled out as a positive. Also singled out as a positive would be that the guidelines point out the risks of bad fats. The guidelines dropped so-called lean meat from its recommended list, and seems to somewhere in there, and I guess I'll have to look into the report myself to dig up what it's talking about related to at least mentioning environmental impacts, because if you're making any sort of realistic statement about the environment, it cannot include animal products. So also, though, what's really, you know, like, how do we see this as a victory when the guidelines also suggest that cholesterol in foods is not a major danger, as PCRM points out, contrasting with the Institute of Medicine, which found that cholesterol in foods does indeed raise blood cholesterol levels, especially in people whose diets are modest in cholesterol to start with. I'm quoting PCRM here. The Physicians Committee is concerned that exonerating dietary cholesterol will only confuse an already bewildered public. Most people do not differentiate fat from cholesterol or dietary cholesterol from blood cholesterol. To suggest that cholesterol in foods is not a problem will lead many to imagine that fatty foods or an elevated blood cholesterol level carry no risk to potentially disastrous notions. So, I don't know, hard to see progress when that still exists in the guidelines. Also, the report recommends seafood. PCRM says the report recommends seafood despite frequent contamination with mercury and PCBs, and despite evidence that so-called vegetarians who avoid fish and shellfish are slimmer and have less risk to diabetes compared with people who eat fish. So, I wish PCRM would use the word vegan. All of this plant-based and vegetarian and vegan. What's anybody saying anymore, huh? And I mentioned that Farm Sanctuary, on its website has cooking classes with a chef who said that plant-based doesn't necessarily mean vegan or eliminating animal products. Well, completely eliminating animal products. Who can understand anything except the word vegan? And then if I get to talking about chocolate in a minute here, who will even understand the word vegan, huh? Anyway, so, shellfish, seafood has cholesterol, fat, heavy metals, right? And also a complaint about the report is that it continues to recommend dairy products. So, where are the step forward? Where are the steps forward? I'm glad PCRM is optimistic and looking, with rose-colored glasses, but the report continues to recommend dairy products, and as PCRM says, despite recent evidence that they do not build strong bones or protect against fractures, and actually, if we consider dairy products as examined by the China study, well, the dairy protein is the number one carcinogen to which Americans are exposed. So, the dietary guidelines, there you have them. Once again, corrupted by corporations and the influence of industry on government. Okay. I didn't really want to talk about this because I am a chocoholic. I must confess, as I said, everything about me loves chocolate, wants chocolate every day. From childhood, when I remember Hostess cupcakes and ding-dongs and ring-dings and devil dogs and what else? And, chocolate pudding that my mother would make and chocolate cake that my mother would make. So now the FDA, the headline of a report from the FDA, what the FDA learned about dark chocolate and milk allergies. So this is a consumer update shedding further light on the results of an FDA study on milk in dark chocolate. Let me quote here. If you're allergic to milk and you love dark chocolate, how do you know whether you can indulge in a candy bar without having an allergic reaction? That's what the Food and Drug Administration wanted to learn, especially after receiving reports that consumers had harmful reactions after eating dark chocolate. No, Daisy, you don't get any chocolate. That's what we hear, right? No chocolate for doggies. So it says here, milk is a permitted ingredient in dark chocolate, but it is also one of eight major food allergens, substances that can cause reactions that are sometimes dangerous. Okay. U.S. law requires manufacturers to label food products that are major allergens, as well as food products that contain major allergenic ingredients or proteins. Allergens contained in a food product but not named on the label are a leading cause of FDA requests for food recalls, and undeclared milk, or cow's milk, is the most frequently cited allergen for that purpose. Chocolates are one of the most common sources of undeclared milk, also associated with consumer reactions. So, okay. Yes, Daisy, I love you very much. What I don't understand is that if something is such a major allergen, You know, the dairy protein is the number one carcinogen, and, you know, milk is an allergen. Why would responsible parents ever give the milk of a cow to the milk to a human? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. The FDA tested nearly 100 dark chocolate bars for the presence of milk. Earlier this year, the agency issued preliminary findings and is now releasing more information about its research. The bars tested by FDA were obtained from different parts of the U.S., and each bar was unique in terms of product line and or manufacturer. Bars were divided into categories based on the statements on the labels. The bottom line, you will have to wait till after the break to hear the bottom line on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. I am a chocoholic, bringing interesting news from a report from the Food and Drug Administration, which tested dark chocolate bars. The bottom line, the FDA says, unfortunately, you can't always tell if dark chocolate contains milk by reading the ingredients list. FDA researchers found that of 94 dark chocolate bars tested, only 6 listed milk as an ingredient. Excuse me. When testing the remaining 88 bars that did not list milk as an ingredient, the FDA found that 51 of them actually did contain milk. In fact, the FDA study found milk in 61% of all bars tested. In part, that's because milk can get into dark into a dark chocolate product even when it's not added as an ingredient. Most dark chocolate is produced on equipment that also is used to produce milk chocolate. Ah, yes, we needed to worry about that. We didn't want to think about it, huh? Most dark chocolate is produced on equipment that is also used to produce milk chocolate. In these cases, it is possible that traces of milk may inadvertently wind up in the dark chocolate. So you now have to read that label "may" as "likely," the FDA says. So to inform consumers that dark chocolate products may contain milk, even if not intentionally added, many chocolate manufacturers print advisory messages on the label. There's quite a variety of advisory messages, such as may contain milk, may contain dairy, may contain traces of milk, made on equipment shared with milk, processed in a plant that processes dairy, manufactured in a facility that uses milk. The FDA found that milk was present in 3 out of every 4 dark chocolate products with one of those advisory statements.
Read it correctly. The FDA found that milk was present in 3 out of 4 dark chocolate products with one or more of those advisory statements. Some products had milk levels as high as those found in products that declared the presence of milk as an ingredient. Another problem is that advisory messages may appear to be conflicting if they are accompanied by dairy-free or vegan statements. Even a consumer who carefully reads the label may be confused by a statement such as vegan, which implies that no animal-derived products were used, along with an advisory, or may contain statement referring to the presence of milk, said one of the FDA researchers. Not quite dairy-free. In addition to these advisory statements, labels for chocolate bars may make other claims. Some say dairy-free or lactose-free, but FDA found milk in 15% of the dark chocolates with this label, and 25% of dark chocolate products labeled only vegan were found to contain cow's milk. 25%. Now, they did test 4 bars. Of the 4, one of them had cow's milk. So I guess you can call that 25%, although I'd have to ask my old statistics teacher if that's really, you know, that really applies. Okay, no message doesn't mean no milk. You shouldn't assume that dark chocolate contains no milk if the label does not mention it at all. Milk allergic consumers should be aware that 33% of the dark chocolates with no mention of milk anywhere on the label were in fact found to contain milk. So, we have to look into this a little further before we continue to indulge, don't we? Okay, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Professor Gary Francione coming up with commentary momentarily on the program. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Okay, for all of my chocoholic friends, I put it on my to-do list to do research this week to find the truly vegan chocolate bars out there, the ones made on dedicated equipment. It's on my to-do list because I care about you as much as I care about my indulgence, right? So I want to continue being a vegan chocoholic and not get any dairy by surprise. So Professor Gary Francione joins us now, and he has his weekly commentary at this time, abolitionistapproach.com, and he is the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school, the latest book, Eat Like You Care, and we are happy to have you on the air and not in the air at the moment, Professor Francione.
Well, actually, Bob, they canceled the flight. And they did that a few minutes ago, and I think you would have been impressed by the speed with which I got to the closest hotel near the airport. And I checked in and ran up to the room and got here just in time. In any event, look, it's just one of life's little annoyances. There are many, but it's just one of the little ones.
Right, there are many.
Well, you know exactly. Well, you know, I had an interesting weekend, and one of the things that was really interesting was this afternoon I had a meeting with some local abolitionist activists here in the upstate New York area, and we met at an absolutely fabulous vegan restaurant called The Red Fern in Rochester, and it is just a terrific, just an absolutely terrific restaurant. People who live in upstate New York, anywhere in Rochester, who don't go to this restaurant, you're really missing something excellent. And what I really like about them is, unlike other places that have vegan fare, this restaurant advertises itself as a vegan restaurant there. And I think that's very important. I don't, you know, if I have a choice between a restaurant that says we're a vegan restaurant and one that says we're a plant-based restaurant, even if they are serving no animal products, I see veganism as a political thing, and I really appreciate the political statement that is made by places that are vegan and are proud of being vegan, because this is a political movement. In any event, so I met with some really interesting folks today, some of whom I didn't know or didn't know very well, and some of whom I knew well, but we talked about, you know, next steps. What projects are people thinking about? And some of the folks who showed up just had an absolutely, well, there were two things in particular that we talked about that I just thought were great. One was starting a shelter for homeless animals. But unlike the petting zoos that we have that we call sanctuaries, having a shelter, but having it be a vegan shelter, and a shelter that was very aggressive in terms of its spay-neuter operation, in terms of its promoting no further domestication, being very clear on the abolitionist message, and at the same time promoting veganism very overtly and explicitly. And there were a couple of folks there who have quite extensive backgrounds in shelter work, and they're thinking of doing this sort of thing. And I thought, this is a fabulous idea. This is a paradigm-shifting idea, because, you know, many people can come to this, or will come to this, through their companion animals. I mean, really, once they recognize that there's no moral distinction between the animals that they love and regard as members of their family and the ones that they stick forks into, you know, that's a powerful, powerful image. They can make the light go on for lots and lots and lots of people. And unfortunately, you know, shelters, they do some great work, but on the other hand, they almost always, I mean, I don't know of any shelters that don't have meat. Don't serve meat or dairy or eggs at their fundraising events or whatever. You know, they don't draw they don't make the connection between the animals that we exploit and the animals that we love. Now, obviously, I want to be clear. I'm opposed to all domestication. I don't think we should have pets, what are called pets. But the reality is, we've got zillions of them out there. And, you know, what do you do? I mean, you know, what's the morally acceptable choice? Kill them all? Let them all run free? Those are not morally acceptable choices. What are you going to do with Daisy, Bob? Are you going to let Daisy run free because, you know, people say, oh, well, you shouldn't have animals? Well, I agree you shouldn't have animals, but we got zillions of them here. What are we going to do? And so there's an important connection that can be made with people who live with non-human companions, and there are many, many, many millions of people. And if we can get them to make that connection that, hey, there's no difference between Daisy and the pig I'm cutting into, the pig I'm eating, or the cow or the chicken or the fish or the egg or the dairy, whatever, that's a powerful paradigm-shifting idea. And I think it's just terrific. And, you know, and I told these folks I supported it completely.
The idea would be to approach shelters then around the country, you're saying?
The idea would be to start a shelter that, you know, to have a shelter that was based on this model. My prediction is, Bob, is that this would catch on like wildfire, that this would be something, you know, and other shelters would jump on the bandwagon because they would see, unfortunately, they would do it for the wrong reason. They would see that there's, you know, that there's gold in Dunbar Hills. But, you know, but I really think this is an idea that is just terrific, because we really want to make this connection. You know, there's no difference between the dog or the cat or the bunny or whatever that you love. And the you know, the animals that you're eating, you know, there's just no you know, it's a disconnect. It's a complete delusional, you know, morally schizophrenic way of thinking. And so I was very happy about that. The other idea that came up at the table today was that one of the folks that I didn't know that I met for the first time today is working on a fascinating project where they're trying to start a charter school, and the charter school will be based on it will be a vegan charter school. There will be no animal products served at the school, and it will be a vegan school. I mean, it will be an explicitly vegan school, but it will also be a school in which the students will learn to grow their own food. They'll learn about conservation. They'll learn about sustainability, but not sustainability in terms of animals. I really hate that when people say, "Well, you know, we eat animals, but it's sustainable." I don't even know what that means. I mean, what you can kill one and bring another one into existence, and that makes it sustainable? I do not understand.
It doesn't apply. It really doesn't apply.
As a matter of fact, when I don't remember where I was recently. I was someplace where somebody was talking about sustainable animal agriculture, and I said to this person, "What are you talking about?"
HSUS actually does talk about that. I mean, they use that term.
What does that mean? Do you know what that means? Because I don't know what it means.
I don't know, because, I mean, it's so resource-intensive, land-intensive. I mean, there's nothing sustainable about growing animals for food and impractical. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It means we'll make more money if we call it sustainable, right? I mean,
I don't even know what that means. But anyway. Students will learn about sustainable vegetable agriculture.
Yeah, that's what's sustainable.
How to conserve resources and how to grow their own food. And what the most important thing from my perspective that they'll learn is that animals aren't food, and that animal products aren't food. That food is stuff you grow, and not stuff that you cause to come into existence, that you make suffer, that you kill. And I was just really excited about this, that, you know, I was so energized after that meeting that, you know, that there are folks out there. We're building a movement, Bob. We're building a movement outside of the organized nonsense welfare movement. We're building something outside of it, and it's starting to really take hold. You know, 10 years ago, nobody was talking about abolition. Nobody. And then in 2006 or whatever, the Randy Sandberg from who was then working at Apple Computer, pestered the hell out of me to convince me to start a website. You know, he said, "I'll do the technical stuff. You do the content. I'll do the technical stuff." I didn't want to do it.
I remember him.
I resisted it. I told Randy, "I'm not interested in it. I'm just not interested." He said, "You got to get your ideas out there. You've been working on this stuff for decades. You got to get it out there on the internet." And so in 2006, Randy persuaded me. We started the website. I generated the content. He did the technology. And now, 10 years later, you know, I mean, basically, you know, nine years later, abolition has become the chief paradigm challenging the welfareist paradigm. And, you know, and it's now taking hold all over the place. And it's a grassroots movement. There is no organization. And so, which is something I want to talk about in the second half of the segment, I want to talk a little bit about something, a phenomenon that I find fascinating in terms of the reaction of welfareists to this. But it's taking hold, Bob. And, you know, we saw it at the World Vegan Summit in March. You know, you saw that there were a lot of folks there. There were some folks who were confused, who were people who were, you know, involved with the big groups and just didn't know really what we were about and came because they were curious. I hope they learned. But there were people who were coming saying, "Look, I'm tired of all of that. I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. I want something different. I realize that there's something really important here, and I don't want it to be crushed by the superficiality of these large organizations and
they don't really want to be made into egg salesmen. I mean, if you're an animal advocate, you know, you don't really become an egg salesman. So HSUS released this undercover video, Costco supplier again, right? All of that stuff. So February 2007. 2007, Paul Shapiro commented, it was written, Paul Shapiro, factory farming campaign director of the Humane Society of the United States, which waged a campaign for 2 years to promote the use of eggs from cage-free hens, praised Costco, saying, "Any reduction in animal suffering is a step that ought to be applauded." So, 8 years ago, Paul Shapiro applauded Costco for what? Agreeing to sell cage-free eggs? And now, look at what happens. Look.
Well, look, PETA's done the same thing. And, you know, in what, 2000, I don't remember what it was recently, you know, in the past few years, PETA gave an award to Whole Foods for being the most animal-friendly, you know, the animal most animal welfare-friendly retailer. You know, Veggie News had a picture of John Mackey on its cover. They were giving him an award. You know, Peter Singer and everybody were sending love letters to John Mackey saying how great Whole Foods was. And now PETA is complaining about Whole Foods, claiming that, you know, they're selling humane meat. I mean, it's time
for our break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. Thanks for support of the radio program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Thanks to Selectee. You can order the world's second most popular beverage online at SelectTea.com. That's SeelectTea.com. Organic tea, medicinal flavored teas, instant teas, tea blends and formulas, ruby burst, rooibos, and black and green and hibiscus and medicinal. Check it all out at selecttea.com. And we're on the line with Professor Gary Francione. And it's just that I think the pattern is amazing how it repeats itself. 8 years ago, HSUS gets more donations for convincing Costco to use cage-free eggs. 8 years later, Costco has done nothing, you know, except it enjoyed a reputation for 8 years, which will now be rehabilitated again. And HSUS will get more money for Costco 2, you know, 2.0, the cage-free egg. And cage-free is horrific anyway. Why are we even supporting that? I don't understand anything.
We're not supporting it, Bob. Supporting it. And look, let's be frank. HSUS, PETA, Mercy for Animal Exploiters, all these groups, they have a great business model. This is what they do. This is what they sell. You know, one day they're selling cage-free eggs. The next day they're criticizing cage-free eggs. And then the next day they're supporting more cage-free eggs again. I mean, look, if people want, my view is, if that's what you're into, if that's what gets you excited, do it. You know, I mean, what's really interesting, and the point I wanted to make, is that what I find really fascinating is, the abolitionist movement is a grassroots movement. We make our arguments. We say, look, we don't believe in welfare reform. We don't believe in single issue campaigns. We believe in veganism as a moral baseline. You know, and you know, we believe in human rights. We believe in the relationship of human rights and non-human rights. You know, we have an approach, a theoretical, philosophical approach. We make our arguments for those positions. People don't, you know, there are a lot of people who are attracted and accept those arguments as valid, and they join the abolitionist movement and become grassroots activists. And the people who don't, say, with the PETAs and the HSUSs and the MFAs and the COKs and the vegan outreaches and all that sort of stuff. So my view is, if that's what they want to do, God bless them. Let them do it. I don't really care, because I'm not doing it.
But it's detrimental. They don't even know. You know, they're saying we're doing something nice for chickens by supporting cage-free. It's detrimental.
But look, the large organizations are businesses, they're, you know, and they run on a cult. They, you know, unfortunately, they run on sort of a cult model. That is, they discourage critical thinking. So, you know, they teach people the mantras. We need baby steps. Veganism is, you know, we're not going to get veganism overnight. You know, we need to make incremental steps. Blah blah blah. They teach them the mantras. Anybody who questions and says, well, you know, wait a minute now. You know, we're taking baby steps, but the baby steps are not consistent with the goal that we profess. I mean, you know, we claim on one hand to believe that animals have moral value. On the other hand, we're promoting happy exploitation. How can that be? The moment you say that, you're divisive. You know, you're ostracized. You're criticized. And what I find really interesting is, I mean, look, we're a grassroots movement. We don't have an organization. We don't have employees. We're not, you know, we're a grassroots movement. Why do these welfarists, I mean, you know, the sorts of, I mean, you want to see the hate mail I get from these people. It's just, it really is. As a matter of fact, I'm going to compile it. It's a small selection of the stuff that doesn't have the really vulgar expressions, but sorts of hatred and animosity and anger. It's just remarkable. And you know, but I think it shows something. What it shows is they've got nothing of substance to say. You know, what is it that's so dangerous about our position? We make arguments. If people buy the arguments, they buy the arguments. If they don't, they contribute to HS, US, and PETA. That's fine. They want to do that? That's great. Let them do it. I don't really care. But I think we've got, you know, our job is to present a clear message. And we're doing that. And we're angering them horribly. You know, and it's just amazing. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing the sorts of reactions that abolitionists get. And it's fairly common. I mean, I get a lot of mail from people who say, you know, I was tabling and I had people who are, you know, who are HSUS people come up to me, not HSUS employees, but people who are, you know, big HSUS members or PETA members and come up and yell at me and, you know, be angry with me and be abusive. And, you know, and my view is, hey, look, you know, join the club. They've been doing that to me for, you know, many years now. Was that the music?
That's the music. So we'll see. Maybe Wayne Shun will be on next week. I don't know. He's back from China.
Just let you know. I'm really interested in talking to Wayne. I really am.
Okay. And somebody really wants to see you at the next World Vegan Summit and Expo in the Bay Area. She said she'll come if you're there. So we're going to make that happen.